Let me just ask God to bless our time together in His Word this morning. Father, thank You so much that You have washed away our sins and that our hope is in You. And Lord, I thank You that Your plans for our life cannot be thwarted and that You can work. And Lord, even the worst of situations, thank You so much for that, that we had the promise that You promised to work things out for our good and for Your glory. And we thank You just for our salvation and for our time together. I pray that You would use Your Word this morning. I pray all of these things in Your name. Amen. Well, last night we looked at Ruth chapter 1, and we saw that this story takes place in the time of the judges when people were not obedient to God, and that there was a famine in Bethlehem that caused one man to take his family to the land of Moab. And then once there, Elimelech dies. Naomi's sons marry Moabite women, and then both sons die. So in one 10-year period, Naomi has lost her home, her husband, both of her children. You know, but God was at work even in these heartbreaking tragedies, and Naomi had heard that there was now food in Bethlehem, so she starts that trip home. And by the way, her returning home is a picture of her repentance. You know, she reversed the direction that she and her husband had taken. She left the past behind and she heads home. And then both of her daughter-in-law start to follow her, but she convinces Orpah to go back home. But Ruth clings to her and says, you know, your people will be my people, your God will be my God. You know, right at the end of chapter 1, Naomi really saw none of God's blessings at that time. You know, but all of that was about to change. In verse 122, kind of gives us a transition to the story. It says, so Naomi returned, and with her Ruth the Moabite, her daughter-in-law, who returned from the land of Moab, and they came to Bethlehem at the beginning of barley harvest. So it's supposed to return in empty. She's returning with Ruth, and it's supposed to they're returning at the time of barley harvest. So, you know, the famine's over. The famine that drove them away is now over, and there's food in Bethlehem, so there's hope. You know, she's going to find out that God blesses obedience, and that He always sovereignly takes care of His people. So in chapter 2, we're first introduced to Boaz. So let me read chapter 2 for us, and then we'll go back and look at it kind of verse by verse. Now, Naomi had a kinsman of her husband, a man of great wealth of the family of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz. And Ruth the Moabitess said to Naomi, please let me go to the field and glean among the ears of grain after one in whose sight I may find favor. And she said to her, go, my daughter. So she departed and went and gleaned in the field after the reapers, and she happened to come to the portion of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the family of Elimelech. Now behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem, and he said to the reapers, may the Lord be with you. And they said to him, may the Lord bless you. And then Boaz said to his servant who was in charge of the reapers, whose young woman is this? And the servant in charge of the reapers replied, she is the young Moabite woman who returned from Naomi from the land of Moab. And she said, please let me glean and gather after the reapers among the sheaves. Thus she came and has remained from the morning until now. And she's been sitting in the house for a little while. And then Boaz said to Ruth, listen carefully, my daughter. Do not go to glean in another field. Furthermore, do not go on from this one, but stay here with my maids. Let your eyes be on the field which they reap, and go after them. Indeed, I have commanded the servants not to touch you. And when you're thirsty, go to the water jars and drink from what the servants draw. And then she fell on her face, bowing to the ground. She said to them, why have I found favor in your sight that you should take notice of me, since I am a foreigner? And Boaz replied to her, all that you have done for your mother-in-law after the death of your husband has been fully reported to me, and how you left your father and your mother in the land of your birth, and you came to the people that you did not previously know. May the Lord reward your work and your wages be full from the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to seek refuge. And then she said, I have found favor in your sight, my Lord, for you have comforted me, and indeed have spoken kindly to your maidservant, though I am not like one of your maidservants. At mealtime, Boaz said to her, come here that you may eat of the bread and dip your piece of bread in the vinegar. So she set beside the reapers, and he served her roasted grain, and she ate and was satisfied, and she had some left. And when she rose to glean, Boaz commanded his servant, saying, let her glean even among the sheaves, and do not insult her. Also, you shall purposely pull out for her some grain from the bundles and leave it so that she may glean, and do not rebuke her. So she gleaned in the field until evening, and then she beat out what she had gleaned, and it was eat pie of barley. She took it up and went into the city, and her mother-in-law saw what she had gleaned, and she took it out and gave Naomi what she had left after she was satisfied. And her mother-in-law then said to her, "Where did you glean today, and where did you work? May he be blessed who took notice of you." So she told her mother-in-law with whom she had worked and said, the name of the man with whom I work today is Boaz." And Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, "May he be blessed of the Lord who has not withdrawn his kindness to the living and the dead." Again, Naomi said to her, "This man is our relative. He's one of our closest relatives." And then Ruth the Moabitess said, "Furthermore, he said to me, 'You should stay close to my servants until they have finished all my harvest.'" Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, "It is good, my daughter, that you go out with his maids so that others do not fall upon you in another field." So she stayed close by the maids of Boaz in order to glean until the end of the barley harvest and the wheat harvest, and she lived with her mother-in-law. So in chapter 2, like I said, we're first introduced to Boaz. It says, "Now Naomi had a kinsman of her husband, a man of great wealth of the family of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz." The name Boaz means "in him is strength." You know, it's really interesting to think about Ruth's first husband. His name was Weakness or Sickness. And here Boaz has the name "in him is strength." You know, that's quite a contrast. And, you know, we find out that he is a relative of Naomi through her husband Elimelech, and that he's a very wealthy man. You know, here was a man who had stayed put in that famine and had prospered, you know, despite the famine. And verse 2 goes on to tell us, "And Ruth the Moabitess said to Naomi, 'Please let me go to the field and glean among the ears of grain after one in whose sight I may find favor.' And she said to her, 'Go, my daughter.'" You know, Ruth had humbled herself under the mighty hand of God, and now her conversion is going to show up in her actions and her attitudes. You know, we're reminded that Ruth is a Moabitess, and that's so important because, you know, she was considered an outsider, and that, you know, it shows us that God can use anyone to fulfill his purposes. Remember, she was just an ordinary girl, a young lady, probably in her early 20s. You know, and it also shows us that God's going to be gracious to those who turn to him in obedience and walk with him. You know, Ruth is very respectful of Naomi. She takes the initiative. She serves her mother-in-law. You know, she respectfully asks permission to go and glean. She's responsible. You know, she pleads to go and work. She doesn't wait to be served. She doesn't wait for someone else to meet her needs, but she kind of sees that there's a need, and then she works to meet that need. You know, we see Ruth's humility in the fact that she was willing to go and glean. Gleaning was for the poor and the destitute. You know, it was established by the biblical law, and it was a law that God put into place so that even the poorest could provide for themselves. And what he commanded was that when the fields were being harvested, that they would purposely leave some behind, or if they were harvesting apples, that they would leave some apples up on the tree so that anybody that was willing to do the work could come and provide for themselves in that way. But it was for the very, very poor, the very destitute. Well, you know, this was God's idea, wasn't man's. It didn't mean just because he commanded it that everyone was going to be obedient to it. Well, in those days, people lived within the city walls for protection, the farmlands were all located outside the city. So Ruth was going to leave, you know, the city of Bethlehem. She's going to go outside the city to look for food. And verse 3 tells us, "So she departed and went and gleaned in the field after the reapers, and she happened to come to the portion of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the family of Elimelech." You know, I want you to notice the word "she happened to come." You know, we see the providence of God at work. We know that nothing happens by chance in the life of the believer. You know, God's always at work behind the scenes, working out everything for his glory and for our good. You know, Proverbs 16:9 says, "The mind of man plans its way, but the Lord directs his steps." And so she happens to come to that portion of the field belonging to Boaz. And verse 4 says, "Now behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem, and he said to the reapers, 'May the Lord be with you.' And they said to him, 'May the Lord bless you.'" You mean, remember, this is the time of the judges. Everyone does what's right in their own eyes, and not much good is going on. And yet Boaz's greeting gives us our first glimpse into his godly character. You know, here was a man that his faith spilled over into his workplace. And we'll see in just a minute that his actions back up his words. You know, it doesn't take Boaz long to notice a new face, and it's really interesting how he asks his foreman who this is. Verse 5 says, "Then Boaz said to his servant who was in charge of the reapers, 'Whose young woman is this?'" In other words, he's asking, who does she belong to? You know, does she have a husband? You know, there seems to be an instant attraction between Boaz and this young woman. You know, as one commentator said, he's asking for a little bit more than where should I send her W-2s at the end of the year. So, verse 6 and 7, the foreman replied, "She is the Moabitess who came back from Moab with Naomi. She said, 'Please let me glean and gather after the reapers among the sheaves.' And thus she came, and she has remained from morning until now, and she's been sitting in the house for a little while." You know, Ruth is already building a reputation for herself without attempting to build a reputation for herself. You know, the foreman says she's respectful and polite. She said, "Please." She's hard working. You know, she's worked steadily from morning until now, and she's very loyal to Naomi. You know, she was a hard worker. That was noticed by this foreman. You know, all of this made an impression on Boaz. And in verses 8 and 9, he says, "Then Boaz said to Ruth, 'Listen carefully, my daughter.'" You know, his words, "my daughter," indicate that he was a lot older than Ruth. Most commentators think he was a middle-aged man, and she's probably in her really young 20s, early 20s. He said, "Do not go to glean in another field. Furthermore, do not go on from this one, but stay here with my maids. Let your eyes be on the field which they reap, and go after them. Indeed, I have commanded the servants not to touch you. When you are thirsty, go to the water jars and drink from what the servants draw." You know, Ruth left her house that morning in search of food, but God's going to provide so much more for her. She's finding in Boaz both a protector and a provider. You know, she shows her thankfulness and her humility, as the next verses show. You know, every time Ruth speaks, there's a gentleness, a graciousness, a thankfulness about her. So verse 10, "Then she fell on her face, bowing to the ground, and she said to him, 'Why have I found favor in your sight that you should take notice of me, since I am a foreigner?'" You know, it's really interesting to think that she was so surprised by the kindness that Boaz showed her. You know, she was a foreigner. She was she didn't expect to be treated with any special treatment. You know, for most of us, we expect to be treated with kindness. And when we're not, we're offended by that. You know, but here was this very, very humble girl who never lost sight of the fact that she was an outsider. She's truly astonished that Boaz would be showing this kindness to her. Well, verse 11 and 12, "Boaz replied to her, 'All that you have done for your mother-in-law after the death of your husband has been fully reported to me, and how you left your father and your mother in the land of your birth, and you came to a people that you did not previously know. May the Lord reward your work and your wages be full from the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to seek refuge.'" You know, word of Ruth had traveled fast. Boaz had heard about her loyalty to Naomi. He had heard that she had left her parents and her home to come to a people that she did not know. He knows that she's left all behind to follow the one and true and living God. And he prays two prayers for Ruth. He prays that the Lord will reward her work and that her wages will be full from the Lord, under whose wings she's come to seek refuge. You know, that imagery speaks of a tiny bird that's seeking the protection under its mother's wings. You know, and it talks about being God as our provider, that he's the provider. You know, so he's asking that God will provide for her and that God will protect her. You know, Boaz knows that Ruth's a Moabitess, but it doesn't matter because, you know, her past is past. You know, all that matters now is that she has faith in the one and true and living God. And although he doesn't realize it at this point, Boaz is going to be the answer to those prayers. He's going to be her protector. He's going to be her provider. Well, you know what? Boaz's words could have made Ruth proud. You know, she's living with her bitter mother-in-law. She's an outcast, a foreigner. She probably didn't have a lot of people to talk to. She probably was lonely. And, you know, she could have said, "Oh, yes, I've been so great to my mother-in-law." She could have done that, but she doesn't do that at all. And, again, she's very humble, very thankful. Verse 13, "Then she said to him, 'I have found favor in your sight, my Lord, for you have comforted me and indeed have spoken kindly to your maidservant, though I am not like one of your maidservants.'" Well, Boaz continues his kindness to Ruth by providing for her. You know, she wasn't left to fend for herself. That was the case with most gleaners. They were just, you know, they were out there by themselves, and they were just had to do it on their own. But he invites her to eat with him and his harvesters. So at mealtime, Boaz said to her, "Come here that you may eat of the bread and dip your piece of bread in the vinegar." So she sat beside the reapers, and he served her roasted grain, and she ate, and she was satisfied, and she had some left. You know, here was a girl who was disciplined, self-controlled, even in her eating habits. You know, she ate until she was satisfied, and then she quit. You know, I think so many of us can be controlled by food. It's just something we love to do. A lot of us do love to bake and all of that. And yet here was this, you know, often we can focus on eating too much or not eating enough as women. But here was this young girl who was self-disciplined, self-controlled, even in that area. Well, verse 15 and 16 says, "When she rose to glean, Boaz commanded his servant, saying, 'Let her glean even among the sheaves, and do not insult her. Also, you shall purposely pull out for her some grain from the bundles and leave it, that she may glean, and do not rebuke her.'" You know, Ruth doesn't linger long at the table, but she goes back to work. You know, Boaz instructs his workers to deliberately take handfuls of the stalks of the barley and just drop them in her path so that she can come by and get them. So, you know, he's making her work very, very easy, and he's increasing the reward of it. So she gleaned in the field until evening, and then she beat out what she had gleaned, and it was about an ephah of barley. You know, that was a full half bushel. It would have weighed about 30 pounds. It would have been enough food to last Ruth and Naomi for probably 5 days or more. And it was four times greater than what you probably would have expected to glean on a typical day. So again, he's providing for her in a way that, you know, she never dreamed possible. Well, verse 18 says, "So she took it up and she went into the city, and her mother-in-law saw what she had gleaned. And she also took it out and gave Naomi what she had left over after she was satisfied. Her mother-in-law then said to her, 'Where did you glean today, and where did you work? May he who took notice of you be blessed.' So she told her mother-in-law with whom she had worked and said, 'The name of the man with whom I work today is Boaz.' And Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, 'May he be blessed of the Lord, who has not withheld his kindness to the living and the dead.' And again Naomi said to her, 'This man is our relative. He's one of our closest relatives.'" Well, you know, Naomi had attributed all of her sorrow to God, but now she attributes all her blessings to him. You know, she can't contain her joy. She, again, talks of the Lord's kindness, his hesed, his covenant-keeping faithfulness. You know, hesed is generally translated his loving kindness, and we only find it in the Old Testament. And it always speaks of God's covenant-keeping love. When Naomi says, "This man is our relative, he's one of our closest relatives," and the Hebrew word for closest relative is goel, and it means kinsman redeemer. You know, a goel was someone who would come to the rescue. It included the idea of redemption or deliverance. And so a kinsman redeemer was usually a prominent male in the family, and if he had to, he could avenge a murdered relative, or he could buy back family lands that had been sold during times of distress. And think about a kinsman redeemer, that he always had to be willing to do these things. Or if a man died and he left no offspring, the kinsman redeemer could marry the dead man's wife, and if she had a child, then that child would carry on the name of the dead person that had died. So Naomi seems to grasp the significance of the situation. You know, she's thinking, you know, Boaz can be our kinsman redeemer. Well, you know, in the Old Testament, a great significance was always placed on kinsman redeemers. You know, they didn't realize it at the time, but every kinsman redeemer was a picture of the Lord Jesus. You know, he's our kinsman redeemer. He's, you know, has redeemed our life, has brought us back from sin, has given us, you know, Christ's righteousness. He's our kinsman redeemer. So they always are a picture of that. So there was a great importance placed on that. Well, verse 21 says, "Then Ruth the Moabite said, 'Furthermore, he said to me, you should stay close to my servants until they have finished all my harvest.'" In verse 22 and 23, Naomi replies, "It is good, my daughter, that you go out with his maids, so that others do not fall upon you in another field." Remember, this was the time of the judges. It would have been kind of dangerous there. So she stayed close by the maids of Boaz in order to glean until the end of the barley harvest and the wheat harvest, and she lived with her mother-in-law. You know, again, Ruth's loyalties is seen in her obedience to Naomi's words. Well, at the very beginning of chapter 3, wedding plans are brewing in Naomi's mind. So let me read this to you, chapter 3. We'll read through that and then go back and talk about it. Then Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, "My daughter, shall I not seek security for you, that it may be well with you? Now is not Boaz our kinsman with whose maid you were? Behold, he winnows barley at the threshing floor tonight. Wash yourself, therefore, and anoint yourself, and put on your best clothes, and go down to the threshing floor, but do not make yourself known to the man until he has finished eating and drinking. It shall be when he lies down that you shall notice the place where he lies, and you shall go and uncover his feet and lie down, and then he will tell you what you shall do." And she said to her, "All that you say I will do." So she went down to the threshing floor, and she did according to all that her mother-in-law had commanded her. And when Boaz had eaten and drunk, and his heart was merry, he went to lie down at the end of the heap of grain. And she came secretly and uncovered his feet and lay down. And it happened in the middle of the night that the man was startled, and he bent forward, and behold, a woman was lying at his feet. And he said, "Who are you?" And she answered, "I am Ruth, your maid. So spread your covering over your maid, for you are a close relative." And then he said, "May you be blessed of the Lord, my daughter. You have shown your last kindness to be better than the first by not going after young men, whether poor or rich. Now, my daughter, do not fear, for I will do whatever you ask, for all my people in the city know that you are a woman of excellence. Now, it is true I'm a close relative. However, there's a relative closer than I. Remain this night, and when morning comes, if he will redeem you, good, let him redeem you. But if he does not wish to redeem you, then I will redeem you. As the Lord lives, lie down until morning." So she lay at his feet until morning, and she rose before one could recognize another. And he said, "Let it not be made known that the woman came to the threshing floor." And again he said, "Give me the cloak that is on you and hold it." So she held it, and he measured 6 measures of barley and laid it on her. And then she went into the city, and when she came to her mother-in-law, she said, "How did it go, my daughter?" And she told her all that the man had done for her. She said, "These 6 measures of barley he gave to me, for he said, 'Do not go to your mother-in-law empty-handed.'" And then she said, "Wait, my daughter, until you know how the matter turns out, for the man will not rest until he has it settled today." Well, like I said, wedding plans are brewing in Naomi's mind. And in the very first verse, she says, "Then Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, 'My daughter, shall I not seek security for you, that it may be well with you?'" You know, notice that Naomi calls Ruth my daughter. You know, these two really do love each other. And, you know, love always thinks of the other person as being more important than yourself. You know, although Ruth's been so good to her, she's taken care of her, she's provided for her, she's been her companion. You know, Naomi knows that it's in Ruth's best interest that she have a husband. That's where her security would be. And so she's, you know, Naomi's gone from being bitter and self-absorbed to thinking about what's best for Ruth. In those days, it was the norm for parents to arrange marriages for their children. And Naomi, you know, was seeing it as her duty that she needed to seek long-term security for Ruth. So she begins matchmaking. You know, because she was a woman, she couldn't approach Boaz directly. So she's going to devise this scheme and set it into motion. You know, she seems to sense that Boaz has been very interested in Ruth from the very first time he saw her, but that he may need a little prodding. And so, you know, Naomi's kind of the prototypical Jewish grandmother working behind the scenes, matchmaking. Well, so she tells Ruth in verses 2 and 4, "Now is not Boaz our kinsman, in whose maid you were? Behold, he winnows barley at the threshing floor tonight. Wash yourself, therefore, and anoint yourself, and put on your best clothes, and go down to the threshing floor, but do not make yourself known until he finishes eating and drinking. It shall be when he lies down that you shall notice the place where he lies, and you shall go and uncover his feet and lie down, and then he will tell you what to do." Well, when Naomi's proposing all this, she has 2 of God's important laws in mind. First is the law of levirate marriage. You know, God gave this law to the Israelites to explain what would happen if a man married a woman and then he died before they had any children. Deuteronomy 25:5 says, if brothers are living together and one of them dies without a son, his widow must not marry outside the family. Her husband's brother shall take her and marry her and fulfill the duty of a brother-in-law to her. You know, this law was meant to take care of widows and orphans and to preserve the family name, or take care of widows and preserve the family name. You know, Naomi also has a law pertaining to the kinsman redeemer. Leviticus 25:25 states, if one of your countrymen becomes poor and sells some of his property, his nearest relative is to come and redeem what his countryman has sold. You know, God was the owner of all the land, and he had given certain land to certain people, tribes, and to certain families, and that land was supposed to stay within those families. And so in cases where families lost that land for some reason due to hardship, a kinsman redeemer could buy back that land for the family. You know, these were commands made by God. They weren't suggestions. They were commands. But again, a kinsman redeemer had to be willing to do that. You know, you think about that in light of what the Lord did for us. You know, he was willing to do, you know, the sacrifice on the cross. So the kinsman redeemer always had to be willing to do these things. You know, what Naomi tells Ruth to do, even by today's standards, is somewhat shockingly forward. You know, she pretty much tells Ruth, you're going to go in there and you're going to propose to Boaz. You know, by the custom of uncovering his feet, she was going to be telling Boaz that she was willing to be his wife. So Ruth answers with an answer that every parent hopes to hear from their children. In verse 5, she says, all that you say, I will do. So she's very obedient. Verse 6, she went to the threshing floor, and she did according to all that her mother-in-law had commanded her. You know, it was the end of the harvest. The threshing floor was a raised platform, most likely outdoors, and it was where the grain was winnowed. The grain would be tossed into the air, and the wind would blow the chaff away. And, you know, Boaz would be there. He would work late at night. And that way he would go to sleep. He'd sleep right there at the threshing floor. That way he could protect his grain, and then he could get up early the next morning and he could go back to work. But so she went down to the threshing floor, and she did according to all that her mother-in-law had said. You know, don't you wonder how she felt when she was doing this? Was she fearful? You know, was she scared that he was going to reject this proposal? It doesn't tell us, but you just have to wonder if she was just shaking doing all this. But when Boaz had eaten and drunk, and his heart was merry, he went to lie down at the end of the heap of grain, and she came secretly and uncovered his feet and lay down. And it happened in the middle of the night that the man was startled, and he bent forward, and behold, you know, we skim over that word so casually, but, you know, behold, whenever you see that in the Bible, it's like God saying, pay attention, this is important, behold. And so, a woman was lying at his feet, and he said, who are you? And she said, I am Ruth, your maid, so spread your covering over your maid, for you are a close relative. You know, Boaz was so tired that he fell asleep, and he didn't notice Ruth until the very middle of the night. And then Ruth borrows Boaz's language when he commends her for seeking the protection under the wings of God. You know, when she says, spread your covering over your maid. You know, she's now asking Boaz to be her protector. You know, this was a marriage proposal. Ruth knew what God had promised in his law. She knew that, you know, about the levirate marriage. She knew about the kinsman redeemer laws. And now she's acting on those truths. You know, she didn't, and then she has to wait, you know, to see how he's going to respond. It shows her faith. You know, she wasn't Jewish, and yet she knew what God's law said. She acted on that, and it stands in such sharp contrast to those other people in the time of the judges who had no regard for God's law. Well, all of this came as a shock and a tremendous blessing to Boaz. Verse 10, then he said, may you be blessed of the Lord, my daughter. You have shown your last kindness to be better than your first, by not going after younger men, whether poor or rich. You know, put yourself in Boaz's position. You know, he slept by himself for years and years and years, only to wake up to find a lump at his feet. You know, and behold, a woman was lying at his feet. Not just any woman, but Ruth, who he's been so interested in. You know, he's such a godly man. Notice how quickly he brings the Lord back into this. he again, he calls Ruth his daughter, remember, and tells her how kind she is, that she didn't go after younger men. You know, remember that Boaz is middle aged, and he implies here that Ruth probably could have married others if she had wanted to do so. You know, but Ruth made decisions according to what was right, not according to her emotions. If she had married someone else, Naomi would have been left homeless, and the family name would have died out. And remember that she's vowed that she to be loyal to Naomi until death parts them. And she's true to that vow. Well, and then verse 11 says, "Now, my daughter, do not fear. I will do for you whatever you ask, for all my people in the city know that you are a woman of excellence." You know, already in a very few short months that she's been there, she's earned a wonderful reputation. The Hebrew word for excellent is also used of the Proverbs 31 woman in Proverbs 31:10 that says, "An excellent wife, who can find? For her worth is far above jewels." You know, excellence speaks of moral worth and it speaks of virtue. The same word was used in reference to Boaz in chapter 2, verse 1, where it was translated, "He's a man of standing." You know, a good reputation travels. She didn't have to draw attention to herself. You know, her behavior did not go unnoticed. You know, her boss had noticed. The whole city had watched. Everyone knew what her character and what her heart was like. You know, what kind of women we are on the inside eventually comes out on the outside, and everyone knows. You know, that's why we're told that we have to guard our hearts. You know, Ruth didn't do what she did in order to be noticed. She just did what was right, and it was noticed. You know, my husband always says, you don't have to be flashy, you just have to be faithful. And that's what she was. She was just so faithful, did the right thing, and everybody took notice of that. But then, you know, Boaz probably gave Ruth a shock, because in verse 12 and 13, he says, "Now it's true that I am a close relative. However, there's a relative that's closer than I. Remain this night, and when morning comes, if he will redeem you, good. Let him redeem you. But if he does not wish to redeem you, then I will redeem you. As the Lord lives, lie down until morning." Well, you know, Boaz's righteousness and his self-control are both shown as he tells Ruth that there's a closer relative than he is. You know, he'll be true to the law. That first man has to be given the first opportunity, and he'll be true to that, even though he loves this young woman. He'll do the right thing. You know, as much as he loves Ruth, he loves God more. She had not become an idol in his life. You know, he's going to do the right thing, no matter what the outcome is. So she lay at his feet until morning, and then rose before one could recognize another. And he said, "Let it not be made known that the woman came to the threshing floor." You know, Boaz didn't want to send Ruth home in the middle of the night because it would have been unsafe for her to be walking home at that time all by herself. But he also wants to protect her reputation. So he gets her up, and he sends her on her way home before anyone could recognize her. And again he said, "Give me your cloak that is on you and hold it." So she held it, and he measured 6 measures of barley and laid it on her. You know, Boaz is constantly providing for Ruth. You know, love looks for those needs of others and provides for those, and that's what we always see him doing. And then she went into the city, and when she came to her mother-in-law, she said, "How did it go, my daughter?" And she told her all that the man had done for her. She said, "These 6 measures of barley he gave to me, for he said, 'Do not go to your mother-in-law empty-handed.'" Well, you know what? Naomi's at home eagerly waiting, I think. You notice that Ruth didn't have to go in there and wake her up. I can kind of imagine her pacing back and forth and peeping out the windows, just waiting for her to come home and tell her what happened. And but you know, it's interesting to note that chapter 1 ends with that same word empty when Naomi says, "I'm coming back empty." But you know, now her empty days are over. And then she said, "Wait, my daughter, until you know how the matter turns out. For the man will not rest until he has it settled today." You know, Naomi advises her with wise advice, you know, that wait, sit still, sit tight, stay put. Until you find out what happens, you don't need to strive. You don't need to try to control the circumstances, or you don't need to manipulate. Only wait. You know, her advice to wait, that word wait is waiting with expectancy. You know, it's a stance of faith. It's a confident, expecting belief that God's going to work it out in His timing and in His way. You know, it's the idea of waiting, expecting God to work. You know, it brings to mind Proverbs 3, 5, and 6. It says, trust in the Lord with all your heart, and do not lean on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge Him, and He will make your path straight. Well, you know, my husband teaches one class at, he mainly teaches at the seminary, but he does teach one class at the Master's College, and he teaches a class on worship and wisdom. And he tells me that the biblical definition of wisdom differs from what most people think of wisdom. And although at this time the book of Proverbs had not been written, I want us to look for just a minute at the biblical definition of wisdom, and then we're going to review some examples of Ruth and Boaz and how they're showing themselves to be wise in the story. Well, the biblical definition of wisdom is a skilled and sensible approach to life by God's standard and definition, beginning with the fear of the Lord and always showing up in one's behavior. A skilled and sensible approach to life by God's standard and definition, beginning with the fear of the Lord and always showing up in one's behavior. You know, this type of wisdom is so different from what the world sees wisdom as. You know, it doesn't have anything to do with intelligence. You know, Proverbs 1:7 tells us, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. And then Proverbs ends with the portrait of that excellent woman in Proverbs 31. You know, there, Proverbs is, wisdom is seen in motion when we see that Proverbs 31 woman. You know, and tradition tells us that Ruth is that woman. So sometime go back and read Proverbs 31 and think about Ruth and see how many character traits you can pick out of that woman that Ruth has. We don't know for sure, but that is what tradition tells us. And then Proverbs 9:10 says, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. You know, true wisdom has to begin with our relationship with the Lord, and it always shows up in our behavior. If it's not showing up in our behavior, it's not true wisdom. So think about Ruth. You know, her wisdom began with a relationship with the Lord. You remember that she left behind everything to follow the Lord, to pursue this relationship. She walked into an unknown future, and she counted the cost. The cost was high, but she still, you know, she made that commitment. That's where her wisdom began. You know, because of that relationship, we see fruit. We see wisdom. You know, this relationship shows up in her behavior. You know, she was faithful, and she was humble. Proverbs 11:12 says, when pride comes, then comes dishonor, but with the humble there is wisdom. You know, she took initiative to serve her mother-in-law, and she loved Naomi despite Naomi being a bitter woman. You know, sometimes it's hard to love unlovable people, isn't it? But she loved her in the way that God loves, and she saw Naomi change. She saw God change her. You know, she was content. She knew when she came with Naomi, or at least she thought that she would probably have not have a chance for remarriage, a chance for children, and yet she was content where God had her. She was a hard worker. She didn't see gleaning as being beneath her. She didn't sit around and wait for someone else to meet her needs. And when she was gleaning, she worked hard. You know, she was loyal. She was trustworthy. She had told Naomi that only death would part the two of them, and she was true to that vow. And remember that she tells Naomi, all that you say, I will do. You know, she's respectful. She's obedient to Naomi, to her God-given authority. You know, Proverbs 12:15 says, a wise man is he who listens to counsel. And that's what we see her doing from Naomi. You know, that she never tries to manipulate and control the situation. She doesn't do things with the expectation of the outcome in mind. You know, there's a gentleness, a graciousness, a quietness about her. She's thankful, and her words are always kind. You know, there's so much in Proverbs about our words. You know, our words are so important because they're connected to our hearts. You know, Matthew 12:34 says, for the mouth speaks out of that which fills the heart. So listen to a few of these verses regarding our words and just kind of ask yourself how you're doing in this area. You know, are you wise with your words? Proverbs 10:19, when there are many words, transgression is unavoidable, but he who restrains his lips is wise. Sometimes that's hard for us women, isn't it? Because we like to talk, but where there are many words, transgression is unavoidable. Proverbs 12:18. There's one who speaks rashly, like the thrust of a sword, but the tongue of the wise brings healing. Proverbs 13:3, the one who guards his mouth preserves his life. The one who opens wide his lips comes to ruin. Proverbs 15:1, a gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. Proverbs 15:2, the tongue of the wise makes knowledge acceptable. Proverbs 15:28, the heart of the righteous ponders how to answer, but the mouth of the wicked pours out evil things. Proverbs 16:23, the heart of the wise instructs his mouth and adds persuasiveness to his lips. Proverbs 18:21, death and life are in the power of the tongue. You know, our words are either going to build up or they're going to tear down. And then Proverbs 21:23, he who guards his mouth and his tongue guards his soul from trouble. And then just two more. Proverbs 31:26, she opens her mouth in wisdom, and the teaching of kindness is on her tongue. And Ecclesiastes 5:2, for God is in heaven, and you are on earth. Therefore, let your words be few. You know, how different would our lives be if we could train ourselves to think and to stop and think and pray before we speak? You know, James 1:9 says, let everyone be quick to hear, slow to speak, slow to anger. You know, we never, ever hear Ruth complaining about her circumstances. She's disciplined. She's self-controlled. Others have noticed her, but she never tries to be noticed. She never tries to bring attention to herself. You know, Proverbs 27:2 says, let another praise you and not your own mouth. And that's exactly what we see in her. So how did she do in regards to that biblical definition of wisdom? Did she live a skilled and sensible life? She did, didn't she? Was it according to God's design? And did it show up in her behavior? It very, very much so did. You know, and we also see wisdom lived out in the life of Boaz. You know, he was a man whose relationships spilled over into his workplace. He talked freely about the Lord. He provided for those who were gleaning, and not only did he provide for those who were gleaning, but he went above and beyond what the law required him to do. His words were kind and gracious. He provides for and protects Ruth, and he's determined to follow God and do the right thing regardless of the outcome, even if it means that he can't be with Ruth. You know, so how about Boaz in that wisdom definition? You know, did he live a skilled and sensible life? And was it according to God's design? And did it show up in his behavior? It did. They were both very, very wise, and so many character traits in these two people in the Bible that we can, you know, hopefully the Lord will allow us to emulate in our own lives. But let me close us in prayer. When we come back, we'll see how the story ends. And but thank you so much for being such attentive listeners. And before I close in prayer, thank you so much for the beautiful basket that you gave me. I meant to say this last night and then again at the beginning, but it's just gorgeous and filled with so many good things. And so thank you so very, very much for your kindness to me this weekend. And so let me pray for us. Father, thank you so much for this precious group of ladies, Lord, that and we thank you so much for this church that's so true to your word. And Lord, I thank you for your word and the things that we can learn from it. Lord, I pray that you would teach us to number our days, as Moses says in the Psalms, so that we can present to you a heart of wisdom. Lord, I pray that you would work this out in each of our lives. And we thank you again that you're faithful, Lord, and that your plans for our lives can't be thwarted. Thank you for that. In your name.